This week on Retronauts, we're coming to take your video games away. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Bob Mackey, for this episode of Retronauts. And today's subject is the history of censorship in gaming. Let's see who else is here before I talk more about why I chose this topic. Who's across from me, as usual?
Hi, it's me, your pal, Uncle Jeremy.
Ooh, okay. Is that like Uncle Milty?
I don't know. That's just what a lot of kids call me. Because that are related to me, I should say.
If you compare yourself to Milton Berle, you better watch out because there's one thing you need to worry about. But we'll talk about
cigars?
That later. No. Who else is here?
Rival podcast host / Sonic Ooh. Weapon, Michael Raparos.
Are you coming here to take me down from the inside?
I am.
Oh, wow. Okay. I should be worried.
Just like Shang Tsung in Mortal Kombat 2.
Is that how it worked?
Yes.
I need to read my history of Mortal Kombat again.
You do.
And who else is here today?
Intern for Senator Joseph Lieberman, Henry Gilbert.
Wow. Were you the one that pointed out Night Trap as a snuff film?
I put it on his desk.
Yes. all those girls were really murdered, everybody.
Sir, you need to look at this.
Yeah. Dana Plato really died.
Conspiracy, anybody?
Yes.
Starting on the dark note, I mean, this is going to be a slightly dark episode because we're going to talk about certain events that might have shaped the landscape of media in general. But I did want to do an episode about censorship in gaming because it's always been a thing. And in terms of my use of the word censorship, please don't complain. It is a very broad term. It's just addressing the changes made to a game, self-imposed or not, to make it more palatable for a particular cultural climate. So that is my definition of censorship for this episode. And I mean, we can do an entire series of episodes about how many things were changed because up until fairly recently, I think like almost every game saw some changes in terms of content coming over to America. If it was a Japanese release in the first place. So I did want to do a brief overview of just how video games were not alone in being censored. The history of media is when new media comes out, the general reaction is for people to say, like, it's going to kill us all. We must push back against this. We must fight against this new media because we like the things that we like, and this is frightening. So I did want to talk about a few things because, like, even books were a scary prospect for people who were not used to the idea of written fiction. And the general idea was, like, why would you read a book full of lies? Why wouldn't you just read the Bible, which is true? I mean, this is exactly what people thought at the time.
Last of the Mohicans is killing America.
Yes, exactly. It's warping our children's brains. And so that's the reason most of the first popular novels were epistolary novels. They were written in a letter format as if to say, like, this could have conceivably happened. You're reading, like, correspondence between people. And there would always be a preface, like, this is meant to guide you morally down your path in life, this fiction. So, I mean, there was people worried about, oh, these people reading books, they're going to have their minds warped. They're going to think about sex and violence all the time. And they're reading, like, Jane Eyre and Pamela and things like that. Yes, I do have a master's degree in literature, people, and this is the only place I can use it. But I'm glad Henry is here because in terms of comics, it's really funny to think about where comics started. I mean, comic books originally started as bound collections of newspaper strips. Mm-hmm. And the history of comics in America kind of started where everyone else started. They weren't just superheroes. There were crime comics. I believe the first actual published graphic novel was a crime story actually illustrated by a black artist. So there were crime comics, horror comics, romance comics, horror comics, things like that. But again, moral outrage. These comic books are warping children's minds, and all of a sudden this comic code comes into existence. This is a very short history, by the way.
Thanks, Frederick Wortham.
Yes, exactly. Seduction of the Innocent was a short film, I believe, that was made
about
book.
This. It was a book, yeah.
I've only seen the short film that ends with like a child gouging another child's eye out with a stick or something like that.
That Takashi Miike?
I'm sure he made the remake.
Well, there was like a famous comic, I forget the title, but it included like a woman's eye being menaced with a hypodermic needle, which
I'm sure it was an EC book. But so the thing you're talking about, Seduction of the Innocent, was a book by a very prominent at the time psychologist, a children's psychologist, who said how he was attesting that comic books were ruining the minds of children, most specifically horror and crime books popularized by EC, but he wasn't a fan of the homosexual overtones of comics like Batman or Wonder Woman either. And the video you're referring to was basically like the reefer madness of that time made in response to it, which ends with it implying like, yeah, this kid's going to kill another kid because he saw somebody get stabbed in a crime comic. And that led to the creation. There were a ton of, you know, hearings, Senate hearings, and all that, and it eventually led to self-governance and the creation of the Comic Code Authority, which basically made everything EC Comics published illegal, made superhero comics much softer, and introduced things like in Batman comics, they introduced an old aunt to hang out with Batman and got rid of Alfred because they're like, the at the time it
three
was
three
like,
generations of homosexuals. How dare they?
I suppose it was seen
can
as
only
like,
have two.
I suppose at the time it was seen as like a gay stereotype that a rich man living with his young ward and then his also gay butler. So instead they get rid of
sitting
it.
Sitting around in dressing gowns.
Yeah. And they get rid of the butler and then they introduce Batgirl and Catwoman more as a sexual thing for Batman. But anyway, so yeah. that was the response to it then, and eventually it calmed down, though it almost killed comic books as a major medium until it came back in the wacky, crazy 60s.
Yeah, and I mean, Mad Magazine exists because of the Comic Code, because they were like, we still want to do our weird, gross, subversive stuff, but we're not going to call it a comic. It's now a magazine, which
it's
is not
black and white.
Yes,
so
exactly.
It softens the blow.
But it's important that we mention the Comic Code, because always what happens was, in the face of possible government censorship, there is a self-appointed self-enforced board of censorship that industries usually create in order to avoid, you know, being banned outright by entire governments and things like that.
Well, I think that at least from an American perspective, I think both with comics and video games and with music too, that you see this thing of they walk up to the edge of the government getting a hand in art, specifically in creating like the art board or whatever and having government mandated censorship, and then they just kind of whisper to the corporations, just censor yourselves. We don't want to open this can of worms. And so they end up doing that anyway. But that it was the case Comic Code, which was in effect until – I mean it was basically ignored and weakened and softened into the 70s and 80s. And then lots of big stuff started being published without the Comic Code authority on it. And by 2000, even Marvel and DC just dumped it.
Yeah, I eventually went away. I did notice that. I never really read a lot of superhero comics, but I eventually noticed the Comic Code did go away. But I think it's still on like Archie Comics. Like Sonic is still A-OK, folks.
Yeah, it might be. I have not. I had heard it was pretty much dead.
But. So another – oh, Jeremy.
I was just going to say yeah, there was a lot of pushback against the Comics Code in the 70s because, you know, creators wanted to address serious topics in both Spider-Man and Green Arrow, I think. Both had stories involving, you know, drug use. And it was you know, commentaries against, like cautionary tales against. It was what the moral guardians would want.
It was a
and
PSA.
I think that was really what sort of revealed the inanity of the Comics Code Authority.
Because they wanted to show – they wanted to make really what was kind of a – in Green Arrow specifically, they made what was a very cornball PSA about how heroin is bad. But the very existence of the Comic Code's rules were you can't even say heroin to say it's bad. You'd be
you gotta
saying say
word
heroin.
Smack.
Yeah. Well, you just like, have to say drugs like he's on drugs.
That
and
applied
then,
to a lot of other things. Like for Marvel Comics, they didn't have zombies. They had Zuvembi.
Oh,
they
wow.
didn't have the mafia. They had the magia.
God, so were zombies too close to the occult for Marvel?
Yes.
Like, are yeah, okay. So we're gonna get into.
Code.
I mean, again, it's all what the culture wants to enforce, the popular culture at large. So,
I didn't realize the magia was actually a response to the Comics Code Authority.
Yes,
or
I thought
maybe
that was
they
just
didn't
like
want
thinly veiled. Yeah, like the Kuyaza.
So a few more instances of censorship in terms of mediums or media, rather. Movies in America were pretty, you know, there was no governance over what kind of content. If you look at things like Fritz Lang's, what's the word I'm looking for, the movie?
Metropolis?
There you go. Thank you. Metropolis. There's like nudity in it and stuff like that, like really salacious gowns and you can see breasts and things like that. This happened before the Hays Code came into effect. And essentially it made it so these movies had to abide by all of these rules, again, that were enforcing the cultural values of the time, which in this case were pretty racist. And one of the rules was like no miscegenation, no black or white relations should be mixing, no race mixing at all. We don't want this in our white movies. So again, these cultural values were not shared by everybody, but they were the kind of dominant values at the time. And it's funny how certain directors love to find ways to sneak things past this. Like Alfred Hitchcock, for instance, you couldn't show a toilet in a movie, for example, with the Hays Code, or a toilet flushing, I believe. So he made it so I believe Norman Bates tears up the letter the girl he kills writes and flushes it down the toilet after he kills her. So that was an important part of the movie, and he fought them on that, and he won. So he broke new ground in showing flushing toilets in movies. So thank you, Alfred Hitchcock, for doing that. But I mean, noir movies, all kinds of great subversive directors love to break these rules or find ways to break them cleverly.
Isn't that also why, like, in movies and TV shows at the time, you always had husbands and wives sleeping in separate beds?
Exactly, yes. I mean, and even in movies, too, you would see that. And it was always, like, something you would giggle at, like, later in life, because unless your parents were really on the rocks, I don't think they slept in separate beds.
You'd have to really be on the rocks to just invest in separate twin beds.
Like, we're going out and buying separate beds, honey.
Is it time to push the beds together again?
Was that Ned Flanders?
I think that might predate Ned Flanders.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. So again, with movies, we have the MPAA coming into being as a self-governing board. But again, they have values that not a lot of other people share. For a long time, it was really hard to get content involving gay relationships into movies without them immediately marking it an X rating or something like that. So again, they are reflecting popular values. And in this sense, these are Christian values for some people.
The documentary, This Film Is Not Yet Rated, really dug into a lot of the hypocrisy in there. Often on the sex side of things, they made a differentiation between the explicitness of a sex act between a heterosexual couple would be allowed, but that same level of explicitness between a gay couple would not be allowed.
Yeah, that's a great documentary, by the way.
Yeah.
And in terms of comics, you should really read The 10-Cent Plague. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic, super long overview of how censorship changed comics in America. So I have one more example of self-governance in terms of content. In this case, I don't believe any content was exactly changed. It was more of a warning, and that was the infamous explicit lyrics sticker, which I believe was spearheaded by Tipper Gore, who seems like the ultimate buzzkill. And I'm not surprised why Al left her eventually, because if you go back to these old videos of her like freaking out about music, she just seems like unhinged. And for things that are frankly, I think, innocuous in the long run. I mean, this is the pre-internet age. Any child could go online onto YouTube and look up any NWA song on their own if they wanted to. But at this point, there were gatekeepers, then that was the music stores and things like that. So there was an explicit lyrics sticker in this case put on things. I don't think there were any lyrics change. I know that whoever wrote Two Live Crew, they had like a First Amendment sort of battle, and I think they won that in terms of explicit lyrics. For they did the song Me So Horny and all that thing. I mean, it wasn't
that's
good.
That's probably the most tame song.
Yes.
What you do see now are alternate versions of albums sold at like Walmart or something.
Yeah, you're right. Walmart will not stock the explicit lyric albums. But also, who buys albums at a store? Like,
I was in a Target.
You'd be surprised.
I was in a Target yesterday, and I had the thought of walking by like CDs and felt like, oh, how retro, like CDs, like a thing you buy. But people do still buy them. I don't want to sound like an elitist who's moved past CDs. But I do recall, like, in my stupid teen years, I bought the first Eminem CD, and the there was the cleaned up version of it that they sold at stores, which it was just him basically re-recording new lyrics to half of the song.
It's like the airplane edit, the version you listen to in an airplane.
There's one song, it is one of his least popular songs on that album, but it's where the story is that he gives a girl too many mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms, and she goes into a coma.
Oh, that old yarn.
But then in the cleaned up version, she's allergic to regular mushrooms that he puts on a pizza.
Jesus,
that is what happens to her.
It's like the Radio Disney version.
Yes.
How about you change the lyrics to "I Want to Hug and Kiss You"? Everyone would enjoy that.
That's beautiful.
So again, this episode is meant to be those are some examples. I mean, I just wanted to point out that video games are not alone in being fought against in terms of, oh, this isn't right. Our children are going to kill each other. This is going to warp our values. I think people are calming down much more than they used to. But I want to explore various cases of this over the years and how I want to show people who might be a little upset about common cases of censorship these days that it used to be a lot worse. We're actually in like a very good era in terms of people not sanitizing things as much as they used to. And I do want to point out this episode is mainly going to deal with the American side of things because I was going to attempt to jump into other censorship in like Europe and Germany and Australia, but that's a whole another can of worms that I think you can do an episode for every country. And Australia in particular seems like the most reactionary in terms of video game content. You guys have heard stories and read stories about like this game is banned, and if you live in Australia, you have to order your games in New Zealand and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other examples of that? I mean, I know it feels like their government really is kind of behind in terms of this, like accepting video games as entertainment.
I believe they lightened up on it, but they for a certain time, I believe it was under the same ratings board that they did their movies, and so when it got the 18, I believe it was rating for a movie or a video game, you didn't sell it there. But it was as simple as just going to New Zealand and buying it. Not that that's like, yeah, just go to New Zealand. That seems pretty easy, right? Well, must be right next door.
Unless I'm wrong, like there was a push to have games rated the same way as movies because their games ratings just didn't have an 18+. So you couldn't market anything there that would be rated an 18+.
I see.
Yeah. And that happened with like Fallout 3 was unavailable in Australia for a long time.
Wow. Yeah.
GTA 3 had to be toned down. I actually have an Australian copy of GTA 3 that like I ordered special for a feature at Games Radar. That like you can't pick up prostitutes. There's not much blood.
Are they afraid of recidivism there? Like, well, everyone here came from a criminal stock.
Oh, wow.
We don't want to influence anyone unduly.
All of our Australian subscribers just unsubscribed. Yeah, if you're an Australian, and let us know what censorship is like there. I don't know if it's as draconian as it used to be, but I'm feeling it's still a little backwards in terms of.
I've seen stories about Australian bans as recently as a few years ago. I can't remember what it was for, but it's not been that long, so that may still be in effect.
And then there's the stuff you read about, you know, Germany cuts a lot of stuff you would expect. And also, like, though it's not censored in Japan, I believe their zero rating is pretty much the same as an AO rating is here with the SRB. And I think, as I recall, it's not – I mean, sex is definitely a thing there too that will cause a zero rating, but – like decapitation, just any like dismemberment is a big no-no in those.
We're going to get into why, and the true story behind that is terrible.
Oh,
yes,
no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I do want to address that because I just really found out about it recently, and I think more people need to know about it. So yes, I want to ask you guys, can you recall the first time we actually picked up on a game that there was censorship in? Like, when was the first time you noticed, like, this could be censored? And in terms of my own experience, I remember playing Earthbound, and I believe the first boss you fight, usually when you fight a boss, you go up to them, you talk to them, they like diss you a bunch before the fight starts, and his last thing was like, "Don't go to heaven." And I was like, are they winking at me like they wanted to say go to hell?
Yeah.
And things like things like Chrono Trigger where you pour soda on Toma's grave or whatever. Like, it was obvious. Like, this was alcohol. Like, you were saying go to hell. Jeremy, can you think of anything you picked up on as a kid or a teen or whatever? You're like, they changed this, didn't they? This had a cross in it at one point or something like that. I mean, Castlevania, obviously, that's a huge one.
I'm trying to remember when I discovered Castlevania had censorship to, like, statuary being more fully clad in the American version,
right,
or Medusa losing her femininity altogether in Castlevania 3. But I didn't know that at the time. I did think it was kind of weird that, hey, why is this Medusa a dude?
Medusa,
what?
Hey, they need love,
but
too.
But yeah, the Toma Levine pouring soda over, having you pour soda over his grave, like, that stood out.
This Mr. Pibb holds my memories.
I remember actually being surprised that Golgo 13 was not censored on NES.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. It really slipped through.
That was kind of a schoolyard, like, teehee. Because someone told me, like, oh, yeah, you go and smoke cigarettes to gain health. So
it's the best game ever.
I was really curious, and I rented it, and then I got to a sex scene and was like, what?
Am I remembering correctly in that you're actually good at Golgo 13? the NES game?
I have finished Golgo 13.
Oh, Lord, Jeremy.
That makes him the best Golgo 13 player around.
God, you're going to be recruited by an actual sniper society.
I finished it when I was a kid, when it was still relatively new, and I picked it up a few years ago, and it's like, I don't think I made it past level one.
I think
they reversed the jump and attack buttons. Yeah. Bastards.
And that's the ads for it were, if I can just take a little aside into speaking of trivia, the ads for it was like, so much action, you'll wear out the B button. It's like, the B button is jumping your stupid game.
even the ad people thought it was wrong. Yeah. They wanted it changed. Yeah. Michael, how about you? Anything that stuck out to you as like someone growing up being like, you changed this?
There's
like,
probably a bunch of things that I'll remember after the fact. So I'll just say I guess I was old enough by the time Final Fantasy III/6 came out that like the cafes everywhere were just kind of like, really? They're going to go to a cafe and drink milk?
Yes.
They're not going to go to a bar or – yeah. And like just realizing like, yeah, that happens in a lot of Nintendo games, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, a lot of people spend time in cafes.
It was like that in Earthbound as well. I think the localizer was just like so winky because you go into a bar and there are like drunk middle-aged people and they're like, I've had too much caffeine today. And it's like, yeah, okay, I know. I've had too much caffeine. I don't look like you. I'm usually vibrating and very anxious. Mm-hmm. Henry, anything from you?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. I think I definitely remember in River City Ransom, when I saw butts, I was like, oh, I never see butts in other games. It was more of realizing perhaps other games cut them out when this one somehow kept it in when you go to the sauna or the gym in that game. But I also think Final Fantasy III/6 as well, but that was because I was making friends. I didn't have the internet. This was only like 96, so not many people I knew didn't have the internet. But I had made a new friend who I was 14, but his – and he was too, but his older brother, he was online. And so he was like this – we thought he was the coolest guy who knew everything because he could just read online, hey, do you know Shiva is like – shows her boobs in the real Final Fantasy III, which is called 6? And we're like, what?
How
what?
Many Final Fantasies? Yeah.
How did you know these things? You're magic. Like, so I think that might have been one of the first times I really realized it.
Yeah, I think there's something to the notion that – you started to realize that games were censored when you came across games that weren't. Bionic Commando is that way for me because you fight Hitler and he calls you a damn fool.
Yeah.
And we're all like,
wait, what's his name?
We blew up Hitler, Master D.
Master D. Yeah.
Then we blew up Hitler and his head exploded gorily. Other games don't do this. And I think that may be where we realized you know, they censor games and somehow this one didn't get censored.
So I wanted to I linked you guys to an article, and it's cool if you didn't get a chance to check it out. But this article has been on the internet for, I swear to God, 20 years, and it's still up in its original format on, like, Tripod or whatever. It's called The Expurgation of Maniac Mansion. And as a kid, just, like, as soon as I got on the internet, I'm like, I want to read about Maniac Mansion. Who's written about it? Are there more Maniac Mansions I need to know about? And this was one of the first things that came up. It's essentially someone – I believe his name is Douglas Crockford, and he was working on the port for the NES. And it's basically an account of how contradictory and strange and just frustrating the censorship was that was being enforced by Nintendo. And there are some changes to Maniac Mansion that don't necessarily ruin the game but make it a little different than the PC version. Of course, they take away some of the classical art that features female nudity. They take down Dead Cousin Ted's like Playboy mummy centerfold with no nudity. It's just a cute joke. And in the PC version, I guess this is a fair cut. I mean, Nurse Edna, it does want to have sex with the college students that come into her room, probably without their consent, because she says, you're lucky I didn't tie you to my bed when she captures you. So in the NES version, she just comes off as like a stern scold, like, you're lucky I didn't call your parents, which, yes, I can understand why that's not a Nintendo game. But
there was one line, because I read that article too, and that was cut when you call up Nurse Edna and don't say anything, and she's like, is this an obscene phone call? Because there's no heavy breathing.
Yes,
better
exactly.
Do it right. And
she was a real
here,
perv.
Let me show you.
And she's a perv in Day of the Tentacle, too, so that's her character. But one other change that was weird was, I will link to this article. Please read it. It's a really good insider account of what it was like to work on a game that was, that needed censorship. And one of them was the SCUM system was what Maniac Mansion ran on. And it stands for Script Creation Utility for Maniac Mansion. And in the credits, it says NES SCUM system by, and the people who made the SCUM system for the NES, and the people Nintendo would be like, why does it say NES SCUM system? What's this mean? They explain this and like, we don't know if we want the word NES being next to SCUM. So I don't even think they mentioned SCUM.
It's like you're calling us SCUM.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
So I could be wrong about this, but it either just says SCUM system or it's not in there at all. But NES is not near SCUM system in that credit sequence. So yeah, I mean, they were very, very touchy. But again, they had to be paying attention to all the content in the game, and a lot of it did slip through. So like the Hays Code, the NES censorship code had a number of rules to follow. And I'll go over these really quick, and maybe we can think of a few things that didn't follow them. So, Nintendo would not approve of any games that include sexually suggestive or explicit content, including rape and or nudity. I don't think there was a lot of nudity that I can recall in NES games.
In the Japanese version of Galgo 13, sequences have nipple. The American versions do not, but they did not cut out the very obvious silhouettes coming together and...
That's how babies are made.
And then the health bar refilling, which then led to a schoolyard rumor that that's what was happening in Zelda 2 when you go into the woman's house to refill your health.
That's right. Oh, man. Zelda. Yeah, I forgot about that.
And the previously mentioned River City Ransom butts.
Yeah, I think the lady was giving Link special hugs. That's what my mom told me. So another one is they do not approve of games that contain language or depictions which specifically denigrates members of either sex. Isn't the first line in Galgo 13 just a woman or whatever? Or just a woman? Ninja Gaiden, yes.
Yeah, just a girl. Get out of here.
Ryu Hayabusa, you're on red alert for this one. So they cannot depict random, gratuitous, and or excessive violence. We already mentioned Hitler's head exploding. Depict graphic illustration of death. Depict domestic violence and or abuse. And one of these I can think of is in Mother 2/Earthbound. After the prologue, when you bring Pokey and Picky back to their parents' house, their dad chases them upstairs. And in the American version, you just hear the sound of a door slamming. In the Japanese version, you hear the sound of them getting spanked. So that was one thing they changed for the American version that I can think of. So
that actually makes more sense than a door slamming.
Yes, exactly. Like, why else would he be chasing them upstairs? So games that reflect ethnic, religious, nationalistic, or sexual stereotypes or language. This includes symbols that are related to any type of racial, religious, nationalistic, or ethnic groups, such as crosses, pentagrams, gods, or gods. But apparently, Roman mythological gods are okay, and they had no problems throwing Hindus under the bus either, because
that's
it was
true.
Like, your gods are just silly fun creatures we can summon in battle. Like, yeah.
Your religion isn't real.
Yeah.
This is something that makes Bionic Commando interesting, because they did take out a lot of swastikas.
That's right, yeah.
And a lot of German Nazi symbolism. But then they kept Hitler exploding at the end. So...
I like to think the censors just didn't make it that far.
Me too.
Well, yeah. It's okay. It's Capcom.
I don't know how it was done back then, but when people submit games to ESRB for ratings, the ESRB does not play these games in their entirety. They're given a videotape where the publisher says, here are the objectionable material in the game. Here's the objectionable material. Here are the parts that will cause a problem. So let's list it for you what the issues are and give you kind of a synopsis of it.
This has so much comic mischief in it. It's going to blow your minds.
Well, and it's expected that they're not being lied to.
Yeah.
Right? If they are –
There's an assumption of faith.
Yeah.
Good faith.
And if speaking of faith.
And if you disrupt that faith, there will be consequences for that. Like the ESRB is not going to trust you as much next time.
Well, I wanted to point out it was strange that everybody knows about Castlevania. The crucifixes got turned into boomerangs. They were censored outright from the game. Crosses were taken out of DuckTales. And yet, what is on the front of Link's original shield?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
He's a big old Christian.
And so Majora's Mask, when he gets the Islamic crescent moon on his shield. Yeah, but they did take that off. We'll get to that later, though.
But there's no Christ in the world of Hyrule, so it's not a Christian symbol much.
There's official Link to the Past art of him, like, literally praying in church to a crucifix on his knees. Like, official Nintendo art. So Link is a Christian,
well, I remember,
in case you're wondering.
In Dragon Quest 2, I believe it was, when you started having party members who would be walking around in caskets behind you if they were dead, like, those had tridents on them that I feel certain were crosses Japanese version.
They might have been turned into ghosts at some point just to avoid the cross thing altogether, little floaty ghosts.
It could be a Hindu thing again because the Hindus have like a sacred trident.
But you also go to literal churches to resurrect your team and talk to a nun.
They play very churchy music too with organs and everything.
Yeah, now they have their own symbol. It's like an eagle sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like the Erdrick or Lodo or whatever you want to say.
Roto Shield.
I prefer Roto.
So we also have they will not approve games that use profanity or obscenity in any form or incorporate language or gestures that could be offensive by prevailing public standards and tastes. So take that as you will. Not a lot of cursing. I mean, we do have – I think the harshest curse I saw in a Nintendo game was Damn. Mm-hmm. And that was probably Bionic Commando. I'm sure it popped up at least more than that, maybe one other time. But they were pretty good about language, mainly because things weren't translated properly. So I think a lot of curses didn't make the cuts.
I like to think that somewhere in the secret tunnels in Final Fantasy IV, there's like a dwarf that nobody's discovered that just says, damn ass hell.
Fuck. Yeah. So games, they will not approve of games that incorporate or encourage the use of illegal drugs, smoking materials, and or alcohol. Nintendo does not allow a beer or cigarette ad to be placed on an arena, stadium, or playing field, wall, or fence in a sports game. So it's funny that I feel like the Japanese culture, I don't mean to broadly stereotype, but I feel like they're much more comfortable with drinking in terms of it being a normal human behavior. And in terms of their games, there's a lot of drinking in things like Dragon Quest and a lot of games where it wouldn't normally show up. Like in Wario Land 2, one of Wario's powers is essentially him being drunk. But instead of being drunk in the American version, he's now Crazy Wario. And I think it's like Final Fantasy Adventure.
Crunk
Wario, yeah. Is it Final Fantasy Adventure that there's the banana smuggling side
quest?
That's
Final Fantasy Legends 2.
I confuse them all the time. But in the Japanese version, it's literally heroin. Like in that cutesy little game, there's a heroin smuggling side quest. So, they were really careful to sanitize this stuff. I can't think of anything that really made the cut. I mean,
this is why Virtua Fighter could have never been on a Nintendo console. You would have had to have had Soda Master Shundi.
Soda Master. Oh man, his teeth are so bad.
I never even thought of how strange it was to not see like beer ads in stadiums and playing in a sports game. You still kind of you don't see that in. Even like Madden or whatever, I feel like that'll still get you like references to alcohol or smoking is going to get you an M rating these days.
And games cannot include subliminal political messages or overt political statements. So they can't be subliminal, liminal, or superliminal. And it's weird that they have a game called North versus South where conceivably the South could win the Civil War. So I wonder how they thought about that.
They set all the slaves free in celebration. Okay. Like, all right, guys, we won.
They also had like an American Revolution strategy game. Like it was by Koei. It was along the same lines as Nobunaga's Ambition. Where
Liberty or Death?
That could be, where England could have won.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess there was the Socks the Cat Rocks the Hill game in which some of the enemies were like Richard Nixon and other Republicans and – and I guess there was some anxiety, and maybe that's why the game never got released. I'm not sure if it was worthy of release. It didn't look very good. R.I.P. Socks, by the way. You're a true hero.
I bet it's also very bad.
Yes, it seems like it was.
It seems like it would have been a 90s artifact that belonged just securely in that.
Yeah, I mean, Socks Mania didn't last very long, I think. It was strictly 1992. Uh-huh. So as we talked about, of course, someone had to be looking at these games. We're not sure what their process was. It could just have been an internal thing like, hey, Tom and PR, play this for half an hour and tell us if anything freaks you out. But we talked about some stuff that slipped by. I think the Mac Venture games were surprisingly mature, the NES ports of these games. Like Deja Vu, you're like drugging people. You're tying people up. There's like people locked up in trunks. You can shoot people. You can even shoot yourself. One of the things that scared the hell out of me as a kid was Shadowgate, because I was just playing around. And it's like, I wonder what will happen if I use a sword on myself. And there's like a graphic depiction of you cutting yourself apart and blood spilling out you're dead now. So maybe the fact that it was just text meant that they can get away with it. But these games are remarkably mature and they got away with a lot of stuff, especially Deja Vu, which is like a super seedy noir send-up that was still had like the grittiness of a noir movie.
Well, Deja Vu, there's something that was, I think, printed in Nintendo Power that always sticks with me. They did like a strategy thing. And he's like talking to a woman and they had the text like, sweet as a lemon. I ended the conversation with a swift right hook. It's like, punched a woman?
Yes, you can. I guess you can punch women in this game. That's right, yeah.
I wonder, too, if they were just going through different channels for American published things than Japanese things that came through Japan instead. Like, were they going past different guards of stuff who maybe were either just more lax or more – or there were smaller teams? Who knows?
But yeah, it was such an unorganized process back then.
I think a little background, though, to Nintendo's very strict rules, it has to at least be partially in response to – them just trying to not be Atari with the NES in general, like not that Atari like themselves wanted to publish Custer's Revenge or disgusting junk like that, but it got like big news at the time that you could play that or beat them and eat them on their system.
I guess the Swedish erotica games,
and
so many.
I think Nintendo was just trying to have a more tight grip on it to make it clear to parents too, like, no, this is for your children. This is safe for your children, not like that scuzzy Atari.
What if my son wants bubble bath babes for Christmas? What do I tell him? I'll buy him Wario's Woods instead. It built strong bones. So what else is happening here? Nintendo started to look bad by the early 90s as gamers, quote unquote, grew up. Not really. They just wanted trash in terms of violence and sex. But they wanted these things, and Nintendo was beginning to look like backwards and not great in terms of their competition, the Sega Genesis, who was like, yes, put your gross stuff on our system, even though Sega did censor some stuff themselves. They weren't completely out of this censorship game. But again, I think Mortal Kombat, of all things, really turned the tide because Nintendo, their version of Mortal Kombat looked good, but you had the white blood, the censored fatalities. I mean, you were really going to play that game for the fatalities and almost –
not for the gameplay.
Yes. I mean, some of them were intact, but there were the ones that did not involve dismemberment or like hearts being pulled out or heads being ripped off or whatever. Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a kid growing up at that time, that is when you're becoming savvy enough at age 10 to 12 or whatever to know that Nintendo – to pick up on Sega's marketing message as well, that Nintendo is giving you less than what other people can give you in terms of violence or sex or edginess, in general edginess. And so, I mean, that was totally Sega's marketing point of like, we're more grown up than Nintendo. We're going to sell you these things. And you get hit with that so much that then when you see such an obvious example of looking at Mortal Kombat on the Super NES versus Mortal Kombat on the Genesis, it does feel silly. And you're just like, hey, wait a minute. I have the blinds
because
are off.
Because the excessive blood in Mortal Kombat was not silly at all.
Certainly not. It was grown up for grown up kids like me. And I'm a big boy now.
Yep. I'm a big boy
knows.
And I want some big blood.
If you get hit with an uppercut, an entire can of tomato paste is going to fly out of your mouth.
Exactly. And I want all that tomato paste.
It is sort of like how the UK had the video nasties. And some of them were disgusting and reprehensible, but I would not want to ban them from public viewing. Like Last House on the Left, obviously lots of horrifying rape in that movie. Mm-hmm. But they did have things like Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2. And these movies are just like Warner Brothers cartoons with fake like Kool-Aid being thrown around. They're the silliest, goofiest things. And the fact that they actually concern people just makes me laugh in retrospect. Like you looked at this silly thing and you thought it was like dangerous.
Well, Clockwork Orange was actually banned in the UK for years and years, and like to the point where there was a theater in Paris that was specifically set up to show Clockwork Orange to English people who were coming over. So it just had like one print that was worn completely out from being shown over and over again.
Well, I love Clockwork Orange, but in the defense of that censorship, it was also – that was self-censoring by Kubrick. Like Kubrick supported it. There was –
that's true.
There was a – I believe there was some sort of copycat attacks in England at the time that were inspired
so
by
like
the film.
Englishmen just aren't mature enough to handle this movie.
So he was fine. I don't think it played in England in a theater until after his passing. I think with Sega they also were just getting more into the scatological stuff that Nintendo wasn't so into, like the Boogerman and the all that yuck.
Boogerman, jeez. Was there a Kickstarter for that recently?
I think there was. I think it failed as much as the Dizzy the Egg comeback failed.
Boogerman could not make it to the 21st century, unfortunately. But
his time has passed.
Yes, this episode is really meant to be a companion piece to one that Henry was on. I think it was the History of Video Game Violence. It might be episode 5 of this reboot of Retronauts, but I don't want to cover a lot of the same ground. I do want to briefly touch upon the violence and the way the government responded to it, which frankly wasted everyone's time. But I think it set an important precedent that these things were not going to destroy society. And it was a couple senators. One notable one is Joseph Lieberman, just kind of freaking out over games that do seem fairly tame in retrospect. I mean, Night Trap was one of them. And I don't know if they actually looked at the content because, again, this is something that could be broadcast on TV even then. I mean, I don't even know if there was actual blood shown. It was like usually just girls being dragged away into trap doors and stuff. I mean, this thing was like a made for a VHS console in the late 80s. It was as cheesy as you can get, but I guess they thought it represented a real threat because of the real people involved.
I think it's also to do with the perceived audience for video games.
That's true,
this
too,
is something
yeah.
for little children, and you're giving them horror where sorority girls are being dragged off by vampires.
This couldn't possibly be sold to anyone over the age of 12, so
yeah,
you're trying
exactly.
to poison children with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would bet myself that Lieberman was like handed a memo and they just said like, yeah, this does sound horrible in this memo.
I think they go into the details about it in that book Console Wars.
Yes.
They do, yeah.
And we did cover this in the last episode from 3 years ago, but again, Nintendo was playing it super safe. They were like, our games are only for children, sir, and we cater to children.
Throwing Sega under the bus saying like, they know what they're selling.
Children's playing sweaty combat.
I believe that was probably Howard Lincoln that did that.
Is that
true, Jeremy?
Mm-hmm.
He was the dude. Yeah, he was a supreme bus thrower at the time. So again, the ESRB was created in 1994 as a way to self-regulate content. But as with the MPAA, it reflects certain values that not all Americans share. And again, these people are just terrified of sex. It could be, again, that thing we talked about with the MPAA and that homosexual or non-heterosexual relationships are viewed as like risque content just by existing. At least that's how I view it, because it seems so rare that you see gay relationships or non-heterosexual relationships in games as not just like the one gay character you can date.
I mean, like that as a queer person myself, I would at least like to see like, oh, they put one in here for this one scene. Like I remember playing the Fahrenheit / Indigo Prophecy, and in that there's like a character has just the stereotypical gay best friend. But for me, it was like, wow, an actual gay character in a real game who's just the dumb gay best friend who will talk to her and never be seen again. But I was so excited for that. But I feel like now, at least, thanks to indie games and more diverse voices making games, you're seeing a lot more representation of that, even if many publishers still aren't really putting that in their games.
Yeah, I mean, Bully had the famously the Over the Rainbow achievement, which I got, and it's like again in that game you can kiss all the boys you want to, you can kiss all the girls you want to. It's all fair.
Rockstar has been more at the cutting edge of that than others.
That's
for sure.
And speaking of Rockstar, my last point before we hit our break is even with the ESRB, we still had what I refer to as utter bullshit, like hot coffee, which is completely just a shame that adults reacted to it. They're repeating what they did 10 years ago. And I'm not making a political statement, but I really feel like Hillary Clinton made herself look so out of touch. And I think today's voters are thinking back upon hot coffee when she's like, you better Pokemon Go to the polls and vote for me, kids. And it's just like, you were afraid of a clothed polygon smashing into each other 10 years ago that could only be accessed by a hacking device. So I believe this caused a huge problem for Rockstar. They had to pull games off the shelves, I believe, and re-stickers. for them, well, or something?
There was a lot of misinformation, and I see that all the time still, a lot of willful misinformation where, like, the news story became about, like, oh, you put in – you type in the code hot coffee into the game and that's how you get this. Like, no, that's not – you have to buy a special device and it only works with certain versions and
– I can tell you – I can tell you a retail-level anecdote about that. So I believe it was 04-05 when it happened.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I was working at Blockbuster Video when that happened, and I was having to explain to my coworkers what that even meant, and because we were renting GTA San Andreas a lot. And they're like, wait, isn't this a sex game? I explained, like, no, it's a cheat and you need a secondary thing and it only works on PS2 one.
There's a saucy puppet show hidden inside.
And then came the day when it got officially re-rated by the ESRB as AO, and we actually, like, I was part of taking it off the shelves until we got the re-rated versions from Rockstar. And so, again, I was trying to have to explain to them, but it was kind of just falling on deaf ears, the nuance of the situation and not that just this was a sex game. And also it's still like, so, but if finally you could take out the cheat to see terrible, like, simulated sex, you can still do every single other horrible thing in GTA.
Mm-hmm.
Though I also had been in the situation of Blockbuster of, like, not being like the scold or whatever, not being like a prude, but when parents would rent Grand Theft Auto to them, I would, a couple times I was like, you know, these ratings are right. You didn't, like, I'm just pointing at the ESRB thing. Like, you see what it says this game has? Like, are you cool with that? If you at least bought this Star Wars game, he could still kill things, but not, you know, prostitutes. But don't think it really works.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think this really inspired Rockstar to continue pushing the limit. And for as much as I think they're very tone deaf with their satire and very toothless in some senses, I feel like they are good at throwing something out there and making it part of video game history, like, you are going to see a penis in this game and shut up. There's now a penis in a video game. Maybe there could be more penises. Like, they are really good at doing that, naming a game The Ballad of Gay Tony. Like, there's a gay character who is the central figure of this DLC. Like, they want to push the envelope in terms of, you know, including content that would be, like, frowned upon by the ESRB, I think.
Well, in Red Dead Redemption, which they were making at the time of Hot Coffee, they really were not fans of the government because the government was getting all up in their business about seemingly selling porn to children. And so that's why the actual enemy of Red Dead Redemption is the government being assholes to you the entire time. And
it's an allegory.
I remember, like, at the time, like, I was talking to people who were like, oh, Grand Theft Auto, isn't that the game where you can just go around raping people? Like, Jesus, no.
Jesus.
Are you getting this?
The news really stirred people up into a frenzy about this game without really understanding what it was about. And
in daytime talk shows, like Montel, yeah. I recall when GTA 3 was new, Montel Williams just did this whole thing on it that was like playing in the break room at the place I was working. And I was telling them, like, that's not really – what Montel Williams is talking about is not what really happened.
There's that famous – I believe it's a Fox News still where it's the Mass Effect 1.
Yes.
They found out you can have sex in the game and it's like, sex box? Mass Effect lets your children have sex with aliens.
Uh-huh.
And everyone laughed at it because I think at this point we're like, no, just go to hell. We're okay with this. It's fine. Shut up. And there was no outrage.
Then there was like a conservative blogger who took that and ran with it. And suddenly it became like, oh, you can reach out and rape anyone digitally online.
God,
like, why does this keep coming back to that?
I think they're trying to, like, project their fantasies onto the audience. Yeah. But yeah, so but we're gonna take our break now. I want to say one thing. I believe Bernie Sanders will be pro hot coffee, and with that, we will take our break.
Thank you.
And we are back, and I hope you enjoyed that little commercial break. And we're going to talk about just some common Japanese to English censorship and changes, because I feel like these are the most common ones. Obviously, American culture, especially in the 80s and 90s, was much different than Japanese culture, and what each country would accept was very different. And we talked about a few things already, like, you know, obviously addressing drinking, addressing, you know, Christianity and things like that. But I feel like in general, even today, there is a general aging up of female characters. I feel like we are – we want our girls that are attractive to be not illegal, but maybe barely legal. Or
so the different – I mean – that is just it is to a degree a cultural thing, just like the age of consent is different in two different countries. Mm-hmm. It is what it is, and this is not to make a moral judgment on what number is a better number, but though now I'm sounding like somebody who is
West Virginia does it right.
Well, I think mainstream Japanese don't really find that as appropriate either.
Yes, yes.
I mean, sure, but see, these are things I don't want to make exceptions about Japan. Like, just to say, like, well, I've been to Tokyo four times, so I definitely know Japan.
I've watched lots of anime, folks, so I'm the authority. I've never been to Japan.
All I know is that in American versions of anime, you have a lot of college girls who wear high school uniforms.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, I think they stopped doing that because of there's some precedent set even for that, but that was a common thing. There'd be like a dub line snuck in, like, I just got back from college, wink.
Yeah, it's especially clear they're all 19.
It's especially confusing because in Japan, junior high school is what we would call high school. And so, like, you get these teenagers saying, we're just junior high school students. And it's like, you look really well developed for junior high school students.
Yes, exactly. And not just because they're drawn by horny animators. So Japan does treat Christianity with the same irreverence they treat most organized religions. Just as they borrow, like, Shiva and other gods from other religions, they're like, hey, this cross looks cool. I'm going to make an entire anime series about it and why I'm depressed. So
see, I didn't – I had been pretty guarded from the – Japan's love of Christian iconography until I think it felt like the same year I played the game Xenogears and saw the anime Evangelion, both of which just like bash you over the head with crosses the entire time. And I think actually now I think back on it, it was probably mostly pointed out to me when I was reading the Toasty Frog thumbnail theaters for Evangelion.
Created by one Jeremy Parrish, who is not owning up to it. But people did enjoy those a lot, Jeremy. Are those online? Thumbnail
Somewhere,
theaters? Okay,
probably.
Yeah. Those are Jeremy's like kind of distillations of Evangelion.
Those are like 20 years old.
Yep.
Jesus.
Yep. So, yes, and in that case of Xenogears, I think they were going for obvious Christian allusions. In the case of Evangelion, I think it was like, this stuff looks cool. And I think that the creator almost just has said as much. Like, I like this stuff. This stuff looks cool. There are cool like Latin words I can use, so let's go for it. But
I mean, he was really into the Dead Sea Scrolls.
That too,
talking about Anno Hideki and what he's into.
Except our Dead Sea Scrolls did not predict giant robots attacking Earth, so it was kind of a letdown
case. If you read the sort of extra canon stuff about Evangelion, like the role of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the eggs and things like that, it's bizarre.
Yeah. It reaches beyond Christianity though, right? I mean,
the Dead Sea Scrolls are supposedly like a set of instructions for like populating the planet with it's like an instruction manual, basically.
Yeah. Life's little instruction manual. So let's talk about Xenogears, an important movement, I think, in terms of making us less anxious about things referencing Christianity in terms of iconography and names. I read an article about this that's based on an 8-4 Play podcast in which they reviewed Richard Honeywood, who was one of the main translators on the project. And apparently other translators on the project quit the project because they thought Christian fundamentalists would try to retaliate, would try to blow them up, would try to kill them, because this sort of Christian-themed content, looking at it through an irreverent lens, was kind of new for video games. And that was one of the reasons why they're like, this might not come over here.
I could see them. They're not that far removed from the film released of The Last Temptation of Christ, which did get very vocal detractors against it, and there were like threats of violence. I don't believe there was any violence
that is true
that took place at this, but
and that was only a decade earlier, correct? 1988 was the last temptation. Yeah.
Well, the thing about Xenogears is it doesn't really go after Christianity. There's some imagery, but it's more about the concept of God, and it's not really specific to like the Judeo-Christian God.
What was the deal with the church in – was there some sort of molestation
thing? Yeah, I mean, there was like a pedophile priest thing going on.
Yeah.
But even that wasn't – I don't know, like having grown up, you know, religious, I did not sit there and take umbrage to what Xenogears was saying. I had a lot of other complaints about the game, but it wasn't like, my religion, no. It was like, oh, this is so corny.
I remember there was an article and discussion on IGN way back in the day where they were talking about how Xenogears, it's not just like, you know, plenty of Japanese games have like a crucified god at the end that you have to fight as
yes.
a boss. But this one actually raises questions about like religion and whether we need it at all.
Mm.
And somebody in the comments was like, oh, so Americans can't handle philosophy? Is that what they're saying?
That's very true. Yeah, it's like a discussion of belief systems and things like that through the lens of an anime RPG. Mm-hmm. And I have this quote from Richard from that podcast, and this is what he said on the podcast. He says, they, referring to the other translators, took every biblical reference they could and tried to twist it. One of the translators was worried about this and was like, I don't want to have fundamentalist Christians or other religious groups being upset and blowing up our office. And I guess in the States at the time, it was a concern. So I had two translators walk off the project and I was stuck there by myself. And he tells another story in that I believe he talked the Japanese creators, maybe the director, he talked them out of naming the final boss Yahweh. It was originally Yahweh, which is, I believe, the Judaic name for God, right?
Yeah.
And apparently I never got to the end of Xenogears because I go to hell second disc. But apparently the final boss is named Deus,
yeah.
which just means God. But it's a less offensive version of that term.
Yeah, like Yahweh would have been on the nose.
Oh, yeah.
But even so, it was –
it'd be like Allah or something.
It was kind of difficult to be like, oh, they're dissing Christianity when – like at some point there's Soylent Green happening and
yes
like the entire idea of the god was that he was an engine that powered a spaceship and crashed on a planet and created humanity to become food for him to leave the planet. Like, that's not really reflecting what I remember seeing in Genesis. So. Well,
one thing I really love is that like 3 years later in 2001, I was playing Dragon Quest VII, and when you get towards the end of the game, you fight God, like, and he is literally the bearded Santa Claus God, and he, I think he just fights you because he's bored. He's like, let's fight, it'll be
fun.
He's
just like, hey, can you beat me in combat, and if you win, he's like, ah, good job, way to go.
That's a very Dragon Ball Z.
Yes.
I guess.
Isn't God a final boss in the Simpsons game also?
Yes, yeah. You fight him in Dance Dance Revolution. That's right. What you do. But I think, you know, this brings me back to in the mid-90s, the stuff we were not getting or barely getting, which was also full of Judeo-Christian imagery, were the Shin Megami games. Like, we got some on the Game Boy called Revelations, but I think those took place in medieval-ish times. They were fantasy settings that you could have the remove of it. And then they even put out those – like their Pokemon ripoffs that were
– I think they were called Demi Kids or something like
Demi
that.
Yeah, Demi Kids. So it was it really was what, you know, parents – Christian parents who thought Pokemon was about capturing demons. That actually was what Demi Kids was about.
Yeah, actually I did not get into the amazingly fascinating and somewhat hilarious fundamentalist reaction to Pokemon because – some people sincerely believe Pokemon was a sign of end times. Like, they're making packs with Japanese demons and they're going to take us over. So, yeah, I recommend you look up YouTube videos of preachers talking about Pokemon because when they bring up, like, Pikachu as an evil figure, you'll laugh. Like, Clefairy. There's a picture of Clefairy and the guy's, like, pointing at it with a pointer like, this will bring us down, everybody.
I think I would bet Atlas just self-censored in the way that they just didn't localize many things that – like we got the Jack brothers in the Revelation games, but we didn't get the original – like the original Shin Megami didn't come out in America until it was an iOS app a few years ago.
I have to think of what America – how they would respond to Persona 3 if that came out 10 years earlier where it's
people
like
– people at the time thought it wouldn't get published.
Yeah, like, even then.
I did too. It's like they're going to – hold guns to their own heads?
Yes. Yeah. Smartly, I think that's a very iconic, ridiculous way to summon a demon is to shoot yourself in the head every time. I think smartly, it was a smart choice to change it into magic glasses for Persona 4. It was like, I've got my magic glasses, dink. And
your tarot cards.
Like, yes,
my tarot
exactly.
card and my magic glasses.
Yeah, like tarot cards, pentagrams, making packs with demon. Like, this was like catnip for people looking for, you know, these issues in games. Luckily, it came out late enough where I think and from a publisher like Atlas, you know, if this was a Rockstar game like Demon Summoner New York or whatever they would call it, I'm sure it would have gotten a lot more attention.
Yeah, it's not like Xenogears was the first time we saw Japanese RPGs approach ideas of Western religion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not.
You know, Breath of Fire 2 had a really huge storyline around like a church, and you know, even Chrono Trigger had the cathedral where the nuns turned into Lamia, and yeah, like there was all kinds of stuff like that. You fight God or the master, the creator at the end of Final Fantasy Legend. It was pretty common. And actually, Xenogears was predated by Final Fantasy Tactics, which has a much more bracing and direct take on – like it's a hot take on Christianity.
It's very hot. It's like
– oh, Saint Ahura, who is actually Jesus, was actually a demon who turned into a hot chick.
That was so hard to pull out of that badly translated game though, I think. I mean, I didn't
Maybe
get it.
That was their protection there. Like, this is so badly translated. Right. Nobody will get it.
Yeah. So I mean they were not only afraid – not by they, I mean the industry. I mean they were afraid of stepping on Christian toes, but also people of other religions like Muslims. One of the more infamous removals of content was the Fire Temple in Ocarina of Time sampled a Muslim call to prayer. And in fact, you can actually hear the word Allah being chanted in the background of the Fire Temple. And that was changed to a MIDI version of that chant, I guess. I don't have a comparison between the two. Maybe I'll throw one in right now. Mm. And also Link's shield, the mirror shield, had the Islamic crescent moon on it as well. Mm. And that and Ganon's red blood that happens when you do the final stab at the last boss fight, that is also removed in the second iteration of Ocarina.
I believe it becomes green blood.
It becomes green blood, which is totally cool.
Yeah.
It's Vulcan.
Yeah. There's something similar that happened to
Green blooded son
too.
Of a bitch.
Well, yeah, little green, little big planet or one or two shipped with I believe some Islamic chanting or verses in it.
Or a song that had some.
A song, yeah. And so then they just patched it out on release day. Like, yeah. So if you never went online with your copy, it technically was still in there, but it was gone the second you went online, which you'd need to do anyway, really, to do anything with that crappy game.
Hey.
you know, we're talking about Square Enix. It also reminds me of – or Squaresoft – when Final Fantasy VII came out and like shit and damn was being said in it, like that's when it hit me. These characters could say these words. Like,
it was clear.
Wasn't all of it like garbled?
No.
Like
it was.
It was really inconsistent.
I agree. I think it was
maybe it was like an MPAA kind of thing. Where, like you can have so many instances of this word, the rest have to be garbled.
I think it was such a disorganized project with so many people working on it. Yeah. Some people thought we can swear, and some people thought we can't. So you have Barrett saying like ampersand, like question mark, exclamation point, and then you have sometimes he says ass, like Sid says damn, ass, hell, whatever. So yeah, or maybe Sid swears are just more authentic. Who knows? Mm. So I did want to talk about American games being censored for Japan. I mean, it does work the other way around sometimes. And one of the more infamous instances is And there's a good reason why you cannot detonate the bomb in Megaton in the Japanese version of Fallout 3. And,
why? I don't understand this historical context.
People thing. Still being alive after, I guess, the only nuclear attack on civilians in world
both
history.
Of them.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I. Yeah, no, that's it's pretty obvious what you're
that. So that character, the character who recruits you to do it, I believe he's like just dummied out of the game, and you have to play the game with Megaton Attack. I never blew up Megaton, but I'm a goody two shoes in those games.
I mean, it's kind of it can be kind of rare, I think, where they will even keep out in, you know. When we were growing up, I feel like stock footage of nuclear testing was like used in every movie all the time. You'd see it. I think
and,
they're
Nintendo Play Aloud commercials.
Yeah, I think they're a lot more. They're a bit more sensitive to using that footage in Japan than they we are over here.
Mm-hmm. And there seemed to be a turning point in terms of Japanese content. From my perspective, used to always be more violent. Like that's where you went to get your more violent games, your more violent content.
Especially
what's that?
80s anime.
Oh yes, yes.
Oh man.
Extraordinary, gruesome, superfluous scenes,
like,
of course.
Watching the Guyver opening recently, it's like,
the
oh
Guyver.
My God, he like tears a monster's face in half with his fingers.
Yeah, I mean, that's what that – I mean, when you wanted effed up content, you would go to Japan if you're a young teen, as, you know, looking for rude things to watch.
Yeah, as a kid – well, as a teen, I remember thinking Crying Freeman was like the most obscene thing I'd ever seen. And I bet if I were – I haven't revisited since then. I bet I would just kind of like giggle at it now or just think like – oh, this was as far as I thought it went. Like.
So I always wondered why there was a turning point in Japanese media where all of a sudden things seemed a lot more sanitized. And in doing research for this episode, I found out why. There was an infamous child murder case in Japan. And by child murder, I mean a child was a murderer. And I don't want to get into some of the more gruesome details, but it should be pointed out this child killed and dismembered a special education student and left their head in front of the school gates. And they proceeded to do a very Zodiac killer-like kind of scenario in which they would send letters to the police to newspapers. They murdered another child before they were caught, and I think they attacked a few other children.
Is
but
that the one where they carved X's over the eyes?
I don't remember that detail, but
so
this
it's like a dead cartoon character.
Yes, it could have been that. I'm not sure if it went that far, but this guy was unhinged. I believe he's like in back in society now, but they don't disclose his name or anything like that. But this was the turning point. It was sort of like a Columbine style scenario. Way less damage to, you know, in terms of deaths, but it still was very shocking. And I think from this point on, Japan was super, super, super sensitive about depicting decapitations or dismemberment in games. I'm thinking of like – it really struck me as odd in Resident Evil 4. Leon can undergo – any amount of gruesome deaths that are specifically tailored to certain enemies, to certain traps. A chainsaw guy can just lop his head off and it'll say game over as your body just falls to the ground without a head. None of that stuff is in the Japanese version.
Wow.
And I believe it was this incident that really made that turning point happen where Japanese media in general became much less violent. And my girlfriend was like, is that where Moe came from to replace it? And I'm like, oh my God, you might be right. You might be right.
There have been a few events that have left a pretty profound psychological scar in the Japanese collective conscious. There was the
Om Shinrikyo?
Sarin gas attacks by Om Shinrikyo. Mm-hmm. The stabbings in Akihabara. Yeah.
What was the second? I didn't hear that one.
The stabbings in Akihabara.
That's right,
about 6 or 7 years ago.
Sorry, Jeremy.
That's okay.
Yeah, no, that – yeah.
Like it's such a generally like peaceful, nonviolent culture. Like you don't hear a lot about crimes over there. So the ones that become high profile seem to have a really huge impact on
– yeah, and you can kind of – now I think back at like Japanese media I've seen from the late 90s. Like I can – I feel like I can imagine the shadow like that case cast on it. And same with the nerve gas attacks as well. And like you – I think you look at something like Battle Royale and you think – like I don't know.
Battle Royale I think was a direct like response to this or was directly – I'm not sure when the novel was written. It could have been the novel preceded this, but I think that movie would not have happened if not like looking at like what if children can be violent creatures too? What if children can be amoral? Things like that.
And same with like the terrifying children of like Ringu or
– Yeah, that's true.
The Grudge. Yeah, but yeah.
Ju-on,
thank you. I was trying to be a weeaboo and say their Japanese name for it.
As a culture, we really work out our anxieties through media, and you can see how that's happening here. But I think it was really just the dismemberment involved in this case that made it a very, very touchy thing even to this day. And we'll get away from children being murdered.
Thank you.
If you want to learn more about children being murdered, search for the Kobe child murders on Wikipedia. You'll read a lot of horrifying details that will keep you up at night. So another thing that gets changed, and there are so many instances of this, is just the fact to just the effort to remove general sense of Japanese-ness from things. I feel like this was more common when there was more xenophobia towards the Japanese in America. Stuff like Ace Attorney, I believe if this was translated today, if this was only brought over here today, I want to believe they would still keep it in Japan. But I feel like there was still that lingering, like, would Americans want to play a game about Japanese people? I don't know. So I feel like in those cases, it's not reacting to racism or whatever. It's just like a general discomfort with the idea of, like, you know, why would they want to not play people like who are like them? But
it's so strange to me in the case of Ace Attorney, when like changing food to a hamburger or whatever, like that seems like an odd choice of localizing something when one of your characters or multiple characters, like, basically Shinto priest.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
That is so specifically Japanese, with so many plot points that are specifically Japanese. Having them eat hamburgers won't change that. Like, you can't change those characters.
It's really it's one thing to have Alex Kidd eat hamburgers instead of rice balls, but something else for, you know, Maya Faye to have hamburgers.
Exactly. Yeah.
The creator even said, like, I made the first game ambiguous in terms of where it was set just so there'd be a chance of a localization. But when it didn't get localized, he was like, screw it. So in the second game, the first case is a murder at a Shinto shrine. So the inside joke in the series is how much they tie themselves into knots in order to make things conceivably American. It's like, no. This took place in a different timeline where Japanese were not sent to internment camps and they integrated more with California society. So this is a California that's like part mostly or like half Japanese. I don't know. There's some strange lore to it that's more twisted than the Zelda timeline.
It's the Kelvin timeline.
Yes,
it's
like, exactly.
What is it, like Kakuto Chojin, the fighting game? It's like set in an alternate reality where China discovered the new world.
Oh, is that
first?
What they do? Okay, yeah. It might have even it's not as extreme as like Japan won the war or something. It's just like we did not react as harshly towards Japanese nationals or Japanese Americans as we did during World War II.
But in general, there's a lot of like changing of Japanese foods and stuff.
Yeah.
And though I think this has led to like this kind of something in localization I'm not a fan of, even in my beloved Persona games, which is just like this opposite end of the spectrum of just like, well, they would call them senpai if they're an upperclassman. And so, of course, this is, you know, just the honorifics and stuff are akun, senpai, kohai, like all that stuff. It feels too extreme to me.
I'll tell you what, I don't mind those until they're being spoken by English voice, American voice actors, and then it sounds wrong. Like if there's a Japanese voice actor saying it and I'm reading it on the screen, it feels very natural, of course. It feels like it's a natural part of language, which it is. But if it's an American being like, Jeremy Kuhn, help me, or whatever, I don't buy it. Yeah,
I kind of use that philosophy in my professional life when I'm trying to set up interviews with like Japanese developers. Like I might use honorifics in email, but I will not say those out loud.
Yes, I say Mister. I say Mister. Whatever. Yeah.
Well, because I've in a professional setting, I've taken it with like with Nintendo when they book you things with Miyamoto. He's Mister Miyamoto. Yeah. It's Mister Iwata, R.I.P. But they don't call him them San in the things for them. I would think from a localization standpoint, I get it if in the line, like, one character calls another character, like, blah, blah, chan as a way of saying, like, of belittling them or making fun of them. Just call them like cutesy poo or whatever. Like, make up a new thing. Don't just put chan on it.
Like change the character's tone at least. Yeah.
I don't know how all that works because I used to watch a lot of Ranma 1/2 dub. And they would come up with some really weird... Like, Ranma darling instead of Ranma sama. Like,
that's true.
It felt really awkward and tacked on.
It's a really complicated choice to make.
I just remember.
It's difficult, and that's why I don't envy localizers for a lot of reasons.
Well, especially in like dubs, you gotta. Like, so many you knows have to be said just to fill the mouth movements.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Ranma, you know. I want this, you know.
So in terms of other Japanese games, I wanted to think of a few major examples of, like, removing the Japanese-ness. And some are, I believe, are sensible, like Leap Beat Agents. as much as I love Owendan and those games, the concept is so specific and so foreign that it would never fly. Like, this is the Japanese cheer team game.
But
like,
they didn't
half
ass that one. They gave it a whole hog localization.
All new characters.
They rebuilt the game, and that works.
Like, yes,
they just
made
a new game.
That's a hefty investment.
That wasn't a localization, but it was like, let's take this idea and make it American. But that was, I think, they had good intentions and it worked well. And things like we mentioned in an episode recorded a few days ago or yesterday, Sayuki World 2 became Wampum. Maybe not so sensitive towards our Native American friends,
especially like, why was our little Native American friend running through Chinese bamboo forests killing Chinese ghosts?
Alternate timeline, Jeremy.
Curious.
Alternate timeline. Are there
Tao Feng,
Fist of the Lotus that I was thinking of, not Kakuto Chojin. I say it only because I know someone out there is going to call us on.
Excuse me, Michael. Yes.
One example I can think of.
Kakuto Chojin was one of the games that was changed and censored because of its Islamic elements. They recalled that entire game.
It could have been that same call to prayer sample or whatever. I think so.
Something like that. I think one of the character endings had that. Mm. Sorry, Henry.
Oh, no, that's cool. One thing I always think of with changes, localization, censorship is just the history of the Puff Puff jokes in Dragon Quest. Because those have been around, I believe, since the first game. And in translating it in English, they always deal with it in a different way. I believe in Dragon Warrior, they just called it like the super soapy wash. Or they're like, take a bath. It's the super soapy bath. But it was this thing that they kind of Puff Puff was a borrowed thing from Akira Toriyama, or at least Akira Toriyama put it in his Dragon Ball books.
I did see it in Dragon Ball. Yeah, I think Bulma promises that to Master Roshi when she meets him. Yeah,
it is. I believe it is motorboating or just something, a breast touching a head.
Yeah, breasts are placed on the face and head area. I don't know. I don't know if this is real. I assume it's real.
We did finally see it in Dragon Quest. What was the PS2 one?
They put it in multiple games as a joke. And I wonder if it's like how when we were growing up, there were the stories of like the donkey punch. It was just a sex act that amused immature people. But
it had a funny name and
really
a funny. I remember in one of the games, and it was maybe an NES game, where it's like the girl, you go to a town at night, the girl's like, come and I'll give you a massage, and the lights go out and the lights come back on and it's her dad or whatever. So it's implied that his man boobs were all over your face and head or something like that.
I think that's Dragon Quest 4 or 5 has that in there. And
maybe that was a DS version I was thinking of.
There was also in one of the Dragon Quest games, you get an item by having a wife. Dropping off a man's wife to him in jail, and she gives him the puff puff massage in jail
through the bars.
And, no, they're in the same cell.
So it's like a Midnight Express or something like that.
Oh, Billy! And the big reveal of actually getting to see Puff Puff in obviousness, seeing it clearly was in Dragon Quest VIII on the PS2, where you get a puff puff massage and a woman with a very extreme French accent says, I give the best puff puff massages ever. And she is a voluptuous woman. But then she's like, close your eyes. And so it's just darkness. And then when the lights finally come back on, she's been rubbing slimes against your head the entire time.
I think even the creators realized, like, we have to play with this idea because it might not be appropriate anymore.
Well,
for the time these games are being made.
I actually did get them comment on this one.
On the record. Yuji Horii?
As I've bragged about on this podcast before, I'm very proud.
I'm still jealous.
Yuji Horii the one time, along with the two guys. Actually, you guys, I think you interviewed both the other guys I interviewed at about Dragon Quest Builders this year, Jeremy.
Yeah, I interviewed them twice, actually.
I am so jealous. I'm so jealous. But so at that, I asked him, like, I've noticed that, I'd asked him about how pun-filled and jokey the localizations had gotten, and they're like, we had been working on that because we wanted – they're funny in Japan, but the older localizations weren't funny, and so we wanted them to have more, like, slime puns in there and stuff. And so I said, I noticed the Puff Puff jokes get changed sometimes. They all had a laugh at that as well as the translator. And they said, sometimes we have to change the Puff Puff jokes just for a rating thing, that they're told, like, this will get a higher rating if we're more explicit with this Puff Puff joke. So change it to something else so we can get this E or E10.
Rated T for explicit Puff Puffs. Only in America. So Michael was super nice, and Michael wrote a lot of these notes himself. He actually sent me a bunch of suggestions. We have to move on to our most fun part of this episode soon, but I do want to hit a few of these. And I think Michael really wanted to talk about Supernova's Arc 3D and how that came into being. And that, of course, is the biblical-themed Wolfenstein 3D engine game for the Super Nintendo. Michael, take it away.
Yeah, well, if I remember right, I could be wrong about some of the details here, but when Wolfenstein 3D came to Super Nintendo, they had to cut a lot of stuff. Like the Hitler was changed to the Stadtmeister. Nazi Germany was changed to the Master State. Like basically
the Master State.
All the World War II stuff got stripped out, and it was just a generic you know, dictator you were fighting that was vaguely Germanic. And they had to take out all the blood, of course. There were new weapons like flamethrowers and bazookas, but, you know, the trade-off.
Dogs were changed to rats,
Yeah. You couldn't kill dogs. And I believe that this pissed off the developers to the point that they actually licensed the engine that they had used for the Super Nintendo version to Wisdom Tree to create Supernova's Arc 3D, which was an unlicensed religious game for Super Nintendo. And the
which you can get on Steam now.
Yes. I streamed it on US Gamer. Check that out online, please. But it's very hard, actually.
The crazy thing about Wisdom Tree that I wanted to talk about was that they used to be a company called Color Dreams that produced very edgy games, like one called Menace Beach, for example.
Oh, my God. They did the port of Chiller, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, which is like the most gruesome thing ever still.
I played that in an arcade, and I think it still haunts my dreams.
I bought it from an ad in GamePro that advertised arcade-quality graphics and then realized, like, oh, arcade quality is circa 1982. Got it.
That was an Exidy game. I think that was like kind of like a in the vein of Death Race. They were making these edgy, like, you know, controversial
just
games.
Just to be shocking. Yeah. But and Chiller game, was just like it's a light gun shooter.
You're shooting up tied up torture victims, though.
At one point, yes. One of the stages is that. Like, yes. I don't know why I'm doing this. This seems like a bad thing. But Color Dreams did all these edgy games. And the one I like to point to is Menace Beach, which you're a skater trying to rescue his girlfriend. And in each level, you see, like, this girlfriend tied up on a rack pleading for your help. And, she's wearing progressively less clothing in every shot.
Yeah, it's very Rolling Thunder-ish.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. This becomes they have some sort of we got our souls saved moment. And
come to Jesus moment.
Yeah, come to Jesus moment. Thank you. And became Wisdom Tree. And Menace Beach becomes Sunday Fun Day, about a kid who's just trying to get to Sunday school, and the cutaways to the girlfriend become cutaways to a Sunday school teacher who has a different biblical thing to share with
you. Does
she
get more naked every time?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm out.
She gets more clothed. Uh-huh. Puts on more clothes.
She starts putting
devout
on a parka and like – puts a parka on over that parka.
There's one more angle to the story, Michael. I'm not sure what order the events happened in, but I believe Color Dreams really wanted to make a Hellraiser FPS, and the management would not let them. And I believe all of the assets were gotten rid of, and that's when they had to turn to a more biblical take. But maybe id Software or whatever, they thought that was the perfect revenge, you know, just
that
to have
be,
this.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what events that happened, but I believe people have been trying to find that Hellraiser game, whatever's left of it. But I think like the Flanders, whoever run the company, were just washed their hands of it completely. So yeah. Some other examples are we have Thrill Kill. I think it's the logical conclusion to our obsession with violent-themed fighting games. I remember one called like Time Killers, where it was just like arms and legs being lopped off every second. I was just like rolling my – I was 12 and I was like, come on, get out of here.
That wasn't censored though.
No. Yeah.
Well, that was just in arcade. You can play it. But Thrill Kill became a Wu-Tang game if I'm not mistaken.
It became a lot of things. The engine was used for like five different games, some of them not fighting games. But I guess what happened
when I say Wu-Tang, I mean the rap group, not the kung fu.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So EA acquired Virgin, the game's original developer, and they were like, we don't want our names on this. And this game was all about violent, gruesome fatalities. Fortunately, or I guess unfortunately, depending on your point of view, the developers released this game through a hacking group. So in college, everyone I knew had this game in the early 2000s. I don't know if that was true for you guys.
I was the only one in college who had it. And I that was the only time I've ever paid a pirate anything. And I still feel a little bad about it.
That was one floppy you could have copied or should have. Yes.
But that game is also just trash. Like, it's very.
It's okay. Like, I thought it was really fun at the time because, it's a four-player fighting game. How many of those exist in 1998, whatever?
Sure.
Yeah. So we have some other stuff, and I have to kind of go through these fast because we're running out of time. I'm Jeremy Lammy, of course. The Hell stage was changed to an island, and they change a lyric in the first song that
reference. You play on an island. You go far.
It messes with the meter of the song,
too. It totally
too.
Does. It's awesome.
Yeah, and actually the demo version of that level that is on a PSM disc or whatever or PlayStation Magazine disc has Hell in it. So you can play that version if you get that demo disc and the Japanese version, of course. But it's funny because in the Japanese version, Lammy dies and goes to Hell, and she meets her, the evil version of herself, and has to play against her. In this version, I believe she just gets into a plane crash on that island, but the level is still the same. The level is still like a very hellscape-ish hellscape. Yeah.
And the evil version of Lammy, Rammy, is created by like running Lammy through a fax machine.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Oh, man, I love I'm Jeremy Lammy. Check out our episode on I'm Jeremy Lammy and Parappa if you want to hear me be so positive. You say, Bob Mackie, please shut up. We also have Duke Nukem 64, the most hilarious idea in the universe. I'm glad Michael brought it up because it's like they had to work so hard to make this palatable for the Nintendo audience. And everything about Duke Nukem was the edgy, cool PG-13 hero we all needed at the time. But Nintendo didn't want anything to do with that. So the strip clubs were removed. Steroids were removed. The babes, you could no longer kill them. Instead, you save them, I believe, instead of killing them, I think.
Sure.
Was there anything else you wanted to run over and check out in this one?
The strip club level that was turned into a pseudo McDonald's.
That's right, yeah.
And I seem to think it was the same level, but just everything was reskinned. So what was previously a strip club floor was now a loading dock outside of a fast food place.
Everything offensive. It was changed into Duke Burger. So
that's right.
The porn bookstore was changed into like a Duke Burger, like just the restaurant, and then like there was like the Duke Burger warehouse or whatever. So
I'm guessing he doesn't use someone's neck as a toilet in the N64 version.
I wonder what you remember. I never played that far.
I don't know what those cutscenes, what they did with those graphic cutscenes. So another one that really astounded me 10 years ago or so was when Conker's Bad Fur Day was remade. They made it more censored than the N64 version.
Yeah.
So like the cursing was bleeped out, including the great and mighty Pooh, who says shit and crap and whatever a lot.
It was really weird. There were a couple times where when Nintendo, I think, wanted to prove how not censorious they were anymore, that they would go to such an extreme. And Conker was one of those type things like, we're going to go more M-rated than anybody does. Nobody will say that we're a bunch of babies. And so that's what Conker ended up being, which is just like a very British style scatologicalness too, of not just like its obsession with poo seems like in a very British style.
Lots of rhyming words.
Yeah, it's a
swirly whirly scurly poo.
I think a lot of things got by the censors because they're like, I don't know what these people are saying.
Yeah,
it's like these like the northern UK accents.
What's a twat? I don't know.
Twat.
I mean, you absolutely need subtitles in that game to understand birdie.
The train spotting of video games.
It's fun to listen to the director. He did a let's play of this game, and you have to like pay full attention to this guy if you're from America, because he is very hard to understand. Mm-hmm. You realize where all those accents came from.
I mean, those northerners, man, northern England, they are hard to understand. But that's like Lister and Red Dwarf, like
but very sing-songy accent.
I believe they said they wanted to make a sequel, but they were told like, well, you can't make a sequel till we can prove this will sell, so let's just do a remake. And then Microsoft just got involved and started making like changes to it. And though it's crazy to me to think that they would think shit is like, they can't keep saying shit all the time.
Yeah.
Like that.
That is strange, especially the Xbox was considered like, you know, the adult grown up big boxy console. Oh, yeah. And N64 was like the kiddie console, even though we all played it. We all love GoldenEye, things like that. So I did want to move on to the most fun segment, our 9/11 segment, everybody. Let's give it up for 9/11. It changed everything, of course, including video games. And we as a country were understandably pretty raw about 9/11. And publishers were very anxious to include imagery that would remind us of 9/11. Now, in our modern age, every Michael Bay movie is essentially a 9/11 recreation that intentionally preys upon our feelings. But at this time, we could not have buildings falling over. I believe the original Gundam was running on Cartoon Network, and they took it off the air because, of course, it opens with a colony falling on a planet, I think, a space colony.
Also, the ratings were very bad.
I mean, but I think it was a convenient excuse. A few of these were convenient excuses to cancel a game.
Well, a more obvious example was Adult Swim began like the week before 9/11.
Yes.
And Cowboy Bebop was on that. And An episode that is actually one of their more comedic episodes of Cowboy Bebop involves a mad bomber who blows up empty buildings.
And he wears a teddy bear suit, right?
The teddy bomber. Yeah. And the end of the episode ends with a big fight on basically a Twin Towers to get blown up. Like, so they never – that was episode 21, I believe. They didn't air for a very long time.
But you know, Peter Jackson didn't censor the Two Towers, and that was very offensive.
There were articles at the time. Yeah. Like, people are asking, are you going to change it? Are you going to change
it? Too soon?
No, you idiots.
It's not the Twin Towers. So, I mean, I think that we are so inured to tragedy, especially talking now. We've just been through so many shootings, so many, like, global incidents of violence. I think we are just inured to tragedy, and we don't see these reactions these days. I mean, we had a mass shooting before E3, and I didn't really see a big response outside of, like, the proper moments of silence. So unfortunately, we are just like, okay, yes, bad things are going to happen. But I do want to cover a few things that were changed because of 9/11. And one of them, the most notable ones, was Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty. Apparently, Arsenal Gear was meant to destroy the Statue of Liberty and Manhattan's financial district. So
I mean, it did. You just don't get to see it. You fight on top of it and then climb down and like...
It makes for a very sterile ending.
Yes, yeah. It's very strained. It's very,
very
strange.
There's like a fade out and then you're fighting on top of it.
Though you got to admit, it's pretty impressive that they got that. Like, it was out at the end of September, the game, wasn't it? Like, they made those out.
It was in October.
Oh, yeah, okay. It was October.
It was mid-October, I think.
All right.
So and another thing that happened was there was going to be live action footage of the World Trade Center and the Statue of Liberty. Hackers did uncover the Statue of Liberty live action footage that's still on the disc with like some narration, but I don't think they found the World Trade Center footage. And also something that's really interesting, I read a Kotaku article about this from 5 years ago. Raiden's name was the way it was depicted in Japanese changed. So originally it was depicted with kana, which is the syllabic alphabet in Japanese. And
usually for non-Japanese words.
Exactly. Right?
Borrowed words.
In the Japanese version of Metal Gear Solid, his name was depicted as Kanji because Raiden was spelled slightly similar to Laden in Japanese. Not enough to really make this change justifiable, but that was Kojima's excuse. Like, so even the way characters' names were depicted were changed to remove them from or distance them from 9/11.
So I get it.
That's a very interesting change. Yeah, the RL thing. So yeah, I don't think it's that similar, but maybe the kana are very similar to each other with those two words. So that's one way that it was changed outside of the change of the ending, the change of removing the footage. Stuff
yeah, it
like
would
that.
Just be like an extra character in Raiden.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so
versus Laden.
I don't know if the Japanese were as sensitive as we were, but I'm guessing they had that concern
Still selling GameCubes.
So Grand Theft Auto 3, contrary to popular belief, and this is on a lot of places. I think it's on Wikipedia. It was not delayed because of 9/11, because of content that could reflect upon 9/11. Rockstar's offices were just very close to Ground Zero, and they couldn't do any work while cleanup was happening, while rescues were happening, while people were looking for people. So that's one reason the game was delayed. And there weren't actually a huge amount of changes, as most people believe. Some visual assets were changed so the city looked less like New York, so you weren't actually shooting at New York cops, you know?
Yeah, the cop cars were changed.
So yes. Yeah. Because New York police were heroes at the time, and they were viewed as in a very heroic light, and we did not want to shoot at them.
There was the Strokes debut album came out a month afterwards too, and they cut a song that was only on the UK release called New York City Cops because it's a very innocuous song, but just that the chorus is New York City Cops, they aren't too smart.
Oh, no. That's not a good time for that song.
No.
October 2001. That's right.
There was a whole plotline cut about Darkle, I think, who was going to have you blow up buildings.
I did read an interview with the Grand Theft Auto guys. Apparently, that was never intended to be in the game to begin with.
It was removed
before the game was published, not because of 9/11, but because they just did not finish that content. So that Darkle terrorist guy was just never meant to be in the game to begin with. And I believe all they changed outside of that was like some dialogue by bystanders that maybe wouldn't sound so great in light of 9/11. So I'm not sure what that dialogue was, but it was changed. And a few more instances, the Dreamcast game Propeller Arena featuring dogfights in major cities was canceled outright. But I think this was probably more likely due to the Dreamcast's ultimate decline by this period of time. I think it was like this is a convenient reason to cancel a game.
I mean, the Dreamcast was pretty dead by September December 2001.
Yes, and our last example is Microsoft Flight Simulator 2002 because it was like, oh, the terrorists used this to learn how to fly, blah, blah, blah. Actually, they went to flight school and were never like found out at that point in their lives. But they
also
removed – oh.
The game WDL War Jets pulled off shelves. Because it depicted events similar to 9/11. Okay. You could crash planes into buildings.
Yes, that's exactly what this is too. I mean, they removed crash damage, in quotes, to your plane, which meant your plane could crash but it would not explode. But people modded it back in because they wanted that. So I assume they modded in the World Trade Center as well. And you can probably watch a lot of tasteless videos on the internet that are recreations of 9/11, but please don't.
Oh, there's one more actually that just came to me that the sequel to Neversoft's Spider-Man game, Spider-Man 2 Electro Attacks, I believe it's called, or it's Electro
Boogaloo.
The game was released right before 9/11, and it ends with a fight against Electro on top of the World Trade Center. And so then they immediately redid it, that it's just a battle on top of a tall building and one tall building.
A nondescript tall building.
Yeah.
So to wrap up, I want to know really quick from all of you, because we're shortly running out of time, what is your take on censorship? In short, I'll tell you mine. I think that censorship is – look at it in the larger scope of things. I see a lot of people being very upset about very small changes that are ultimately irrelevant and perhaps not as artistic as you think they are. And as long as it doesn't really disrupt the core game or the core gameplay or the theme of the game or the meaning of the game – if this means more people can play it, I'm generally for aging a character up, covering up a boob, whatever. I mean, I can look at boobs whenever I want to. I have the internet, folks. I don't need them in video games. It's fine. That's my stance on things. Henry, how do you feel about censorship?
Wow. All right.
You have 30 seconds.
Okay. I would say from the standpoint of like localization censorships as well, particularly – the way I grew up is I'd read they changed this thing in a manga or a video game I read or I had played, but I'd never get to see it. Today, if you hear about they changed this thing in video game X, you can see it right there. Somebody has uploaded it to YouTube. It's out there. So to call it even censored feels weird to me. It's just like if you want to see the sexy costumes that they cut from Fatal Frame on the Wii
yes.
U – you can see all of it, all the time. It isn't being held from you. It's just not in the game. And in innocuous cases like that, I don't much care. And I'm not a pro-censorship person either, and artists should be able to do what they want to do. But I guess I have a more grown-up thought now of just like these things are products being sold by companies, and companies censor things. And when I see people getting mad at what they think are like political groups that cause censorship, I want to say like, well, no, Walmart censored this thing.
Yes.
This giant company censored this thing. Be mad at this company that kept this thing from you because they didn't want – they were afraid they'd sell fewer things. Hmm. But that's my feeling.
I think that it behooves people, creators – to really consider what they create and be responsible. And if they're going to push limitations, and break boundaries, they need to make it count and be willing to accept the ramifications of it. I think people who get bent out of shape about perceived changes, perceived localizations, what they think of as censorship by people who are, making their own internally motivated changes – need to grow up and not abuse people who are involved in the process but do not actually make the decisions. That's horrible and idiotic and irresponsible. If you want to make changes, change the systems that cause the pressure and the need to make these modifications. You don't like censorship? Well, work at the cultural issues at large, the conservatism or whatever that encourages and necessitates changes. Like you said, Walmart makes the changes or requires the changes. So petition Walmart. Don't go after like someone who is a low-paid localization editor on a video game who doesn't have any control over this one way or the other. That's not accomplishing anything. And in fact, you're hurting your own case and hurting yourself and hurting other people. So grow the hell up.
I agree.
Jeremy, they censored her vagina bones.
Those vagina bones.
I'm anti-vagina bones, by the way.
I
want to put that out there.
In a glorious future where we are free from the tyranny of vagina bones.
Yeah. Well, now that this is all on record, I'm sure we'll be quoted on many message boards for this. But thanks for the intelligent conversation, everybody. I really appreciate it. All the information about how you can help out the show is in the commercial Craig, please listen to it. But as far as finding all of us, you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I write for usgamer.net and somethingawful.com. And you can also listen to my other podcast, Talking Simpsons. It's a chronological exploration of The Simpsons. It comes out every Wednesday, I believe, on lasertimepodcast.com. If you like The Simpsons, you'll like our show. It's that easy. Henry, where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter as H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G. You can also find me at Fandom, the editorial outlet of Wikia. I write about games on there. I'm senior games editor there. Fandom.wikia.com. Also, I am a member of the LaserTime family. We call it a family now, not a network, of podcasts where we talk about pop culture things on regular podcasts. And I used to do one about comic books called Cape Crisis. You can listen to all those old ones. But I'm also regularly on Talking Simpsons, the weekly exploration of every episode of The Simpsons, one at a time, hosted by one Bob Mackey.
That's me, Michael.
I'm also part of the LaserTime family. You can listen to me talk about video games pointedly every week on Vidigame Apocalypse. Go look at VidigameApocalypse.com. Yes, Vidigame is misspelled the way I'm pronouncing it, V-I-D-J-A.
And Jeremy.
You can find me making dad jokes on Twitter. I'm not a dad. I just make their jokes. You can also find me as Game Spite.
You're a dad at heart, Jeremy.
I am a dad at heart. You can find me, of course, on usgamer.net and posting about terrible puzzle games at Game Boy World.
Awesome. Thanks so much for listening, folks. We'll be back next week with a brand new mini episode. See you then.
They say the Pokemon whole effort is to train children how to become the number one Pokemon master in the world. You follow up through the New Age teaching, you find out the masters are those who take control of spirits in the dark realm, and they tell those spirits what to do. The child at some point becomes capable of taking these powers and channeling them through their mind, through their arms, or through their power sources. Their power sources, of course, are many of the symbols that they pick up from the Pokemon paraphernalia. So Pokemon is a game that teaches children how to enter into the world of witchcraft, how to cast spells, how to use psychic phenomena, how to put to work supernatural powers against their enemies, how to fantasy role play. Pokemon World is a world of the demonic. Gotta catch 'em all. Okay.